Hello, this is Jeff Gaudiosi, and you are on MisplacedStraws.com, where music comes to life. And you may not immediately recognize the name Gary Peel, but you definitely recognize his guitar playing. He was the guitarist on all of Sammy Hagar's releases from 77 through 84. He's been the guitar player for the band Boston since their classic Third Stage record in 86. And he has a fantastic new record out with his band Alliance that's called Fire and Grace. So please welcome Gary Peel. Welcome, Gary.
Hey, thanks a lot, Jeff, for having me on today.
Anytime. And we'll get into the Fire and Grace record itself shortly, but let's start with Alliance, the band. Talk a little bit about how all of you guys came together, because in strange ways, you've all been kind of connected throughout your career.
Yes. Well, I'll back up way to the beginning. In 1977, I joined Sammy Hagar's band, and I'll make a long story a little shorter by saying, but in one of the first dates we started doing was the end of Boston's first tour. You know, their first album came out in 76.
Mm-hmm.
So in 77, they were still touring for that first album. Our manager knew their manager. We got on some shows. They liked us. We liked them. And they said, hey, you guys should do the entire second tour with us. So that's just what we did. We traveled all around the country for about 9 months and played everywhere as the opening act.
It's a great double bill.
Yeah. So that's when we got to know the guys.
Mm-hmm.
So in 85, when Sammy got the call to join Van Halen, Tom Scholz from Boston called me and said, hey, I heard you're out of a gig. Why don't you come back here and help me finish the Third Stage album? There's one more song to be recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, that's all he was offering. But, of course, I said, oh, absolutely. Sure, yeah. So mm-hmm. I left from our last gig with Sammy, which was Farm Aid 1 out in Champaign, mm-hmm. Illinois. Flew directly from there to Boston to start working with Tom. After a few weeks of working on that song, he said, gee, I think we work well together. Why don't you move back here? We'll finish this record and we'll maybe tour. We, you know, it had been 8 years since the previous Boston album. So we had no idea if people would still like the band or not. You know, Andy Warhol said, you know, you only get 15 minutes of fame. So we had no idea, but as it turned out, the album went to number one. We did a terrific tour with it, and but then after that tour, Tom had said, it's going to be another few years before the next Boston album comes out, so if anybody wants to do any side projects, now's the chance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as it happened, when Sammy got the call for Van Halen, he had said to us, you know, you guys are such a great band, you should just get some other singer and plug him in and keep going. And we intended to do that, and Geffen Records lined us up with Robert Derry, who had been working with GTR and Keith Emerson and Carl Palmer. But, again, I got the call to move to Boston, so I kind of jumped ship. And but then, again, when I had that time after the Third Stage album, I wanted to do a side project, and so I called up Dave Lauser for drums, and Alan Fitzgerald, our, again, keyboard player, mm-hmm. was with us in Sammy's band, who had gone on to be in Night Ranger. And
oddly enough, also played side stage in Van Halen with Sammy. Yeah.
Exactly. And if you want to go, you know, one more step is that the keyboard player that we had at the end of our time together in Sammy's band was Jesse Harms.
Mm-hmm.
He went on to play on David Lee Roth's album. So it's a small world.
Yeah. Very.
But anyway, so I called up Dave and Fitz and said, hey, let's do something. And they said, yeah. Hey, remember that guy that Geffen turned us on to, Robert Gray? Let's call him. So the four of us met in actually in Sammy's home recording studio, and we showed each other all our song ideas, and Robert just fit in great with us. You know, he was like the brother we never had. And so we started to do it. So that's how the band came together.
And in the 30 years since, you know, you guys haven't put out a ton of records. Fire and Grace is your first in about 10 years. And was it just that now was the time you guys were feeling creative, or has it been in discussion for 10 years and this was just the first opportunity you had to put it out?
The latter, yes. We had worked on songs over that amount of time, but because we'd been so busy with our other bands, we just never had a chance. Mm-hmm. And for us, we like to do it old school. We want to work on songs when we're all together in the studio at the same time. You know, we could send things by email back and forth or whatever, but no, we like being in the same room at the same time. And to that end, for instance, the title track, Fire and Grace, was a song that I had a guitar riff idea. Dave had a cool drum groove, and Robert said, hey, I got some lyrics that might work with that. And we were at Robert's studio, so we pushed the record button and went in, and we wrote that four-minute song in 4 minutes. We just started playing it, and that's the way it came out. Done, you know. So but that's what it's like being in a band of guys you've worked with a long time that you trust to do whatever's right to make the song better. You know, you're not looking to be a virtuoso guitarist, drummer, singer, whatever. You just want the song to sound good.
Well, and I think that's something kind of unique about you guys is you're all top musicians in your field, but yet you blend together perfectly. And I think that also comes out, as you were saying, everybody in the studio at the same time. You can tell that. You know, you could tell the records were things are kind of phoned in from around the world versus those that are in the studio. It definitely brings a more organic feel to it.
I'm glad you can hear that because that's definitely what we're shooting for.
Yeah.
And again, yeah, for us, there's no ego involved. Sometimes Dave, the drummer, will say, oh, gee, this one section of this song, try to strum the guitar kind of like this. And he's not a guitar player necessarily, but he's hearing something in his mind. So here's the drummer telling me how to play guitar, right? But whatever it is, I'm going to try it because I know he's got something good in mind. You know? So yeah,
well, it goes back to that trust of you guys have played together in Sammy's band and all those years, you know where he's coming from.
He's exactly right, yeah.
And Fire and Grace is the record. I mean, it really is just a perfect modern melodic rock record. And so when you guys put out something like that after 10 years, I mean, do you feel the pressure to, A, live up to the reputation that you've built with the previous Lions records, and B, sort of make sure it's worth the wait for the fans?
Yeah. You know, when we first got together, again, we had worked in Sammy's band together, but we all had different influences. Of course, myself, Boston, and Fitz with Night Ranger, and Robert with Emerson and Palmer. So, yeah, we had a lot of different styles and influences and different things that we liked. So we were, you know, searching for our sound, like how can we be unique, you know. So those first few records, you know, we were kind of like maybe all over the map, you know, trying a different style of this and maybe work this out. But now I think we got the bull by the horns.
That's for sure.
We know how to make an Alliance record. You know, it doesn't sound like Sammy or Night Ranger or Boston, you know.
No. Nope.
It sounds like us. And so, yeah, you could give us three chords and we could turn it into an Alliance song because now we know what we're doing.
Well, you know, the elephant in the room when you talk about Alliance is you guys have only played like one live show in the past 30 years. I mean, is there any chance of that changing with this, you know, great new record and the reaction that you've gotten to this record?
I sure hope so. And certainly we've talked about it. And it just so happens this summer, Boston is not touring, so I'm available. And so I was telling the other guys, hey, I can do it. If you guys can get together, you know, let's do it. So we would love to play some festivals where, you know, you got 10 or 20 bands on the show, and the audience comes knowing they're going to see some band they've never seen before.
Yeah.
And that would be us. You know, maybe, yeah, they recognize us from our other bands, but they get to see, you know, Alliance is something that, you know, not very many people have seen. So that would be great. And our label is based in England where they have festivals there, of course, in Europe and, and certainly the U.S. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that somehow we can put it together to do some festivals here this summer.
Okay, well, I got to put you on the spot. If you were to play, what are some of the songs that would be in your Dream Alliance set list?
Wow. You know, everything we've ever played. Even from the first record, you know, because you got the favorites that were on that very first album that we'd love to play. But certainly all the new ones.
Yeah.
and then all the ones from the previous album. So it goes back like that. Yeah. So, but yeah, this one of course is the most fresh to us, and where we think, wow, that, you know, this is going to sound good live. And I think we could do a good job live because, again, we don't do a lot of overdubs in the studio. It's not like we've got, you know, 20 guitar parts or something. Right. I think we could pull this off, you know.
Well, speaking as a fan, that's something I would love to see or hear. Now, right. Let's go all the way back. You know, you talked about joining up with Sammy in 77. At the time, was his third record, Musical Chairs. How did that come about? How did you end up meeting Sammy?
Actually, a few years before that, I was in a band there in the San Francisco Bay Area called Crossfire, and we were always looking for a singer. Mm. We had tried out a couple of guys that either couldn't do it or weren't quite right for us. Actually, two of the guys we tried out, one was Eddie Money, and we just thought he was a little more bluesy than what we wanted. We were going for more of a prog rock kind of thing. And the other guy that we tried out was Mickey Thomas, who went on to be in the Starship. It was Alvin Bishop. And because I was in a band previously with him in a gospel band where we were doing old-time straight gospel. It was really roots rock and roll stuff, you know. But he was in the Bay Area at the time, but he was moving back to Georgia, which he did, so he didn't join our band. But then he got hired by Alvin Bishop, did Fooled Around and Fell in Love, and then the Starship, and the rest is history, you know. So anyway, long story short again, so we had heard that Sammy had just left Montrose, and we somehow got his phone number and called him up, and he said, well, thanks. Yeah, I don't want to join a band. I've got some guys I'm working out. I'm putting my own band together. But maybe I can do some shows with you guys. And so he actually opened up some club dates for us there in the San Francisco area. So we got to know him a little bit. And our manager told me, he said, you know, why don't you just go play guitar in Sammy's band instead of him joining us? And I said, well, he's been through a half a dozen guitar players, you know. He'll just have me for a couple of weeks and kick me out. What's the point, you know? And he said, well, you know, give him a call. And so I called him up, and he said, oh, Peel, are you into drugs? I said, well, no, why would you ask? And he said, well, because the last guitar player I had OD'd on cocaine in the bathroom of a gas station.
Oh, God.
Like, oh, man, I feel terrible. So I particularly tell this to young musicians who are like, how'd you get that gig? You know, Sammy's like, yeah, that's how. It's like, and they go, oh, okay, stay away from drugs. Okay. So anyway, so Sammy says, come on down to rehearsal and jam with us. I'm like, okay. So I go down to jam Alias audition for the band. And while I was there, Sammy's manager called up and said, hey, there was a gig with Queen and Thin Lizzy. Queen canceled. Thin Lizzy's going to headline. You guys could be the opening act if you have a guitar player. So here I am. Sammy turns to me.
Yeah, no pressure.
Yeah, it's in 2 days. And I said, oh, sure, yeah, I can do that. And so, of course, I went home and practiced as hard as I could. Mm-hmm. We did the show and actually got a nice review from it. But I still figured that, you know, maybe they just hired me to fill in or something. And at the end of the show, I was saying goodbye. And Bill Church, the bass player, said, no, you're in the band. I said, oh, okay, nobody really told me, you know. So anyway, 8 great years in Sammy's band, and people ask, you know, what's it like working with Sammy? And I said, you know, what you see is what you get. He's always in a good mood, terrific musician, great singer, and he was our cheerleader. You know, it's like, okay, the next record's going to be even better. You know, we're going to be in bigger places, and that's what happened. You know, every year got better and better. You know, playing bigger places, more people, sold more records. You know, bigger shows. And so at the end, in 85, when he got the call from Van Halen, he said, oh, man, we were doing so good. You know, I hate to break up the band, but, you know, it's an offer I can't refuse.
Yeah, and, you know, that's kind of where I was going to go, because you guys, you were on top of the world. I mean, with Standing Hampton, Three Lock Box, VOA, and then this call comes. You know, how did you guys as a band feel about it? I mean, you were lucky enough that, you know, Tom from Boston was right there and remembered you at the time. But when Sammy first let you guys know, what was your reaction?
Well, you can imagine we were all a little bit, disturbed by that news. Because you're glad that your buddy is, got a great offer to do something else. But on the other hand, it's like, well, yeah, we were doing pretty good. We had videos on MTV and the whole thing and playing bigger places. You know, we would headline arenas in different towns across the country. And when we started with Sammy, he was not very well known at all. You know, we'd go down south and play, and people would say, Sammy Hagar, oh, yeah, he's one of the Hagar twins from that TV show Hee Haw, right?
Not quite.
No, he's not country. He's from Montrose, that's Sammy Hagar. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, we built it up with him all those years, again, a lot of fun working with them. So, yeah, we were definitely sorry to see it end.
And then once you get into Boston, what's it like being in a studio with Tom Scholz? I mean, he has that mystique of sort of the mad scientist when he's recording. What's it like watching that firsthand?
Well, backup. So he's got a studio in his house now. In fact, that's where he recorded the first Boston album, not in the same house, but he recorded the first album in his basement at the apartment building he lived in at the time. So, yeah, he's always had his own gear and done his own thing. Mm. And again, that first Boston album was the biggest selling debut album ever.
Right.
And so I was, to say the least, a little intimidated. But I had known him at that point for almost 10 years, so I knew the guy, and so I was comfortable around him. But on the other hand, it's like, well, here I am trying to lay down a track for a Boston album. But he was smart enough to realize that that maybe he should leave the room. And so we get set up, I got the guitar plugged in and get the tones all right. And he said, look, you know how to record. You've had your own recording studio stuff. He said, you know how to do this. I'm going to go have lunch. You just, punch in and put your parts on. So that's what I did. So he was, again, smart enough to realize that, yeah, it's probably not going to be any good if I stand over this guy's shoulder and watch what he's doing, note for note.
And now, next to Tom, you've been the longest standing member of the band. I mean, does it, at some point now, does it almost feel like, your band as well, because you came in as the new guy, but now that you've been there for over 30 years.
Yeah. I still feel like the new guy in a sense that, because those first two albums were so iconic and that people remember those. So when people say, oh, I love the first two records, I say, me too. but they're not me playing.
Yeah.
But I get to play those on stage, so that's a wonderful thing. But, yeah, because Tom writes all the songs and does the terrific arrangement, and, of course, he's, when they put together those lists of 100 greatest guitar players of all time, he's always on there. Yeah. But he's also on the list of 100 greatest keyboard players, because that's him playing on, Smokin' and Foreplay Long Time and all that. And there's nobody else in the world that's on both those lists. And then you throw
in 100 greatest
rock songs, More Than a Feeling or some other Boston song shows up. He designed the amplifiers that we still use on stage today. So, yeah, he's a really special guy. So I look at Boston as, well, as Tom. Tom Scholz is Boston. And the rest of us are trying to make his dream come to life because he can't play all the instruments at once.
And what was it like, playing alongside the late Brad Delp? I mean, that's just one of the most iconic voices that's ever been recorded, and you had the opportunity to kind of stand next to it and hear it live every night.
Yes. Yeah, he was terrific, of course, and such a natural musician. Of course, I get to meet him as the opening act. And again, just the friendliest guy I'll tell you a quick story. One day, again, as the opening act, we didn't get a lot of sound checks because Boston would take so long at their sound check. You know, they would go first, and we hardly ever got a sound check, but we didn't need it. You know, with Sammy, you just turn everything up to 10 and go, right?
And play, yep.
But one day, they were done early, and they called us up. You know, we're back at the hotel waiting, whatever, and they said, hey, you guys can do a sound check today if you want to. I said, yeah, sure, we'll come down and check things out, you know. So we get there, and as we walk into the arena, here's Brad pushing my amplifier up the ramp onto the stage. I said, Brad, what are you doing? He said, well, I feel bad, you know, that you guys don't get a lot of time to do sound checks, and so I'm trying to help the crew guys. And I said, Brad, I don't even push my own ramp. You know? You got crew guys and stage hands. They're getting paid to do that stuff, you know. I said, well, you know, that's, so Sammy nicknamed him the nicest guy in rock and roll.
Well, that's
and
funny.
So, yeah, but as it happened, in 2006, we were rehearsing to do a special one-off show as a tribute to Doug Flutie, the football player.
Yep.
Doug's from the Boston area.
Boston College legend, yeah.
Yeah, because he's been in the NFL and the CFL. He played for Canadian football for many years and ended up back at the Patriots for the end of his career. Anyway, and he, one of his sons had autism, and so Doug did a lot of charity work for autism. And so the city wanted to, again, have a Doug Flutie Day in tribute to him. And they asked him, hey, what band do you want to play? And he said, Boston. That's a great band. So we were thrilled to perform. In fact, he plays drums a little bit. He even came and jammed with us. He played on one of the songs.
Oh, really?
His own tribute. Yeah. But anyway, so leading up to the rehearsal, one day Brad came in and he had a Band-Aid on his baby finger. And we said, oh, what happened to your hand? He said, oh, I had a motorcycle accident. I wasn't even going fast. I was coming up to a stop sign, slowing down, and there were some wet leaves on the road. I hit the leaves. The bike went out from underneath me. Next thing I know, I'm waking up in the hospital, and my helmet was cracked. And I'm thinking, oh, man, what kind of concussion did he get, you know? And so at the time, we figured, oh, well, he's okay. You know, I mean, he got a couple of stitches in his little finger. We thought, oh, no big deal. Well, these days, now we know that when you've had a concussion, your odds of committing suicide are 10 times greater.
Yeah.
We saw that same thing happen. Again, now the NFL is aware of that, and there's, as you know, a big
protocol. Yeah, more studies, yep.
Yeah. And the same thing happened to the singer from INXS.
Mm-hmm.
He had a concussion. 3 months later, he took his own life. But at the time, we had no idea that that was related at all. So, unfortunately, that's what happened to him.
Wow.
Yeah, and so we didn't know if we could continue on without him or not. I mean, how do you replace a voice like that?
Exactly.
But somebody turned us on to Tommy DiCarlo.
Mm-hmm.
He was just a guy working at Home Depot. Never been in a band in his life, but had always liked Boston and sang like karaoke to Boston songs and put it on his MySpace page. Somebody saw that and told us about it, and we checked it out, and one of our management called up Tommy to audition, and I can only imagine what that phone call was like. You know, Tommy saying, wait, who is this Billy? Is this who is this really?
Yeah, stop screwing with me.
Yeah, audition for Boston, right, yeah. But, yeah, so we brought him up, and, yeah, he just sounds great and heck of a nice guy. So it's been terrific working with him.
Yeah, I actually caught the show a couple tours back at Foxwoods. I'm based in Connecticut, and you guys sounded amazing. He did a fantastic job.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and he comes off like the guy next door, right? He's
right.
Not pretentious. You know, he's not being the rock star. He's just being himself, you know.
And now, much like Alliance, Boston isn't really known for its prolific output, although you guys have been touring pretty regularly. Any insight as to when or if we'll see a new Boston record?
You know, Tom's always working on guitar parts and riffs and all that, and I hope there's something coming up. But he'll, you know, he's told us. He said, oh, yeah, I sometimes work on a song for months and then throw it away. It's like, nah, it's just not quite right, you know. So.
Yeah.
You never know, but I certainly hope so. And, again, I hope we do some more touring, which I again, I hope we will, but no official word yet when that might be.
And now, one of the things you always, one of the places you always hear Boston's name come up is the, you know, the argument over who should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I think Boston has probably about as big a claim as any band that's not in there. Is that something that has ever crossed, you know, your mind as someone who's been in the band for 30 plus years, or Tom's mind, or is that more of a fan thing?
It's really a fan thing. And I've heard people mention that to Tom, saying, oh, you guys ought to be in the Hall of Fame. And Tom says, well, you know, whatever. If it happens, great. If not, that's okay. You know, we kind of stand on the music, like, you know,
right.
Obviously so many people like the band. That's all that matters. Same thing with the Grammys. I don't know if you remember that, if you're old enough.
Yeah.
So here's the, you know, again, the first Boston album, biggest selling debut album ever. And they lost the best new band to the Starland Vocal Band.
Yep, Afternoon Delight.
Right, yeah. So I was like, is that fair? You know, where are they today, you know?
Well, that's why I think when you look at the history of who the Grammys have picked for best new band versus who lost, the losers usually end up having the better career. So maybe that part was a good move.
That, somebody just pointed out to me that same year that Starland Vocal won for Best New Artist, they also won for Best Vocal Performance over Queen for Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, that pretty much is everything you need to know about the Grammys.
There you go.
Well, again, thank you so much. The Alliance record, Fire and Grace, it is out everywhere. It's on all the streaming services. I can't recommend it enough. It's just, if you're looking for a great modern melodic rock record, great vocals, great musicianship, this is the one for the summer, in my mind anyway. And hopefully one of these days we'll get to see Alliance on stage. Would love a live record, but that's just me putting that in your ear.
Yeah.
But again, thank you.
Jeff, if we ever get to your neck of the woods, please come down the show. I'd love to shake your hand and meet you in person there, either
Definitely.
With Alliance or with Boston.
Looking forward to it. Well,
yeah.
Gary, thank you. Again, everyone, go on wherever you get your music and check out Alliance, Fire and Grace, as well as the rest of Gary's catalog with Sammy and Boston. And it's been a pleasure, and I can't wait to say hello in person soon sometime.
Good. I hope to see you soon.
You got it. Thanks, Gary.